There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along on this Tuesday edition of the show. And reminder, too, shows on the road this week. Friday, we're going to be live at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo from noon to 2. And then a special outdoor show from 11 to noon on Saturday. So, yeah, this is my, you know, I fish in the morning, do a radio show, and fish in the morning, do a radio show. But we'll be down there throughout the rodeo, so look for the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit. That's our big van, studio on wheels. Stop by and say hello. I'm even bringing some of the FM Talk 106.5 rope-handled super buckets with me, so make sure to see me and ask for one of those while we're down there. All right, great to have this conversation again with my buddy and get him back on the show. We were going to try to get him back on the show about 2 weeks ago, and he was busy. He'll tell you where. His name's Gary Jarvis. He's owner of Wildland Fire Support Incorporated. As I say, he's one of us. He's from here originally, but he has spent a lot of years, I'm not going to say how old, a lot of years, Gary, fighting fires throughout the West, and now back home teaching people about prescribed fire. Good to get you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Sean.
Yeah, you're teaching people in California at one point.
Yeah, last time I was on here, I had just come back from California and was teaching the leadership course out there for basically getting them ready for fire season. So we do a lot of teaching around the country, and mainly for first-line supervisors, basically teach them how to run a prescribed burn program or get ready for fire season.
Okay, and we're going to come back to fire season and what it's been so far, but to somebody who's never heard of this term, yeah, you and I talk prescribed fire. What is a prescribed fire?
So yeah, that's one thing I definitely want to talk about today, Sean. Is I've been very busy since I talked to you last with prescribed fire, yeah. And so been doing a lot of growing season burning throughout the PBA. Again, I want to remind folks that we're on the call, or maybe new to the call, that I am the coordinator for the Southern Pine Hills Prescribed Burn Association, which is the southeast 10 counties in Alabama. And so basically, I have I work for Tall Timbers, which is a group out of Tallahassee, Florida, a nonprofit over there that I work for that has come together to get this PBA up and started. So we started last summer, and I think we're getting close to 2,000 acres now, and like almost 30 burns we've done. And so basically, it's bringing landowners together in those 10 counties to work with each other and show up and help each other burn. And the number one reason is learning, teaching, and teaching them how to do it correctly the right way, and so they're comfortable burning on their own property eventually. So that's what it's all about. So, yeah, we've done a lot of it, and basically prescribed burn. Answer your question. That was a long way of getting there. It's basically going out and reducing the fuel load before we have a wildfire, so that when we do have a wildfire, we have our fuels under control, so that we can control the wildfire easier, and it don't do as much damage to the timber because we've reduced the fuels under our conditions instead of like the conditions we had last fall, last winter, that severe drought. If we'd had, we had a lot of wildfires during that time, and a lot of timber got burned up because it was so dry and that a lot of it had heavy fuels on it.
Yeah, people got a picture riding down the road, y'all, that not all forests are the same. What's underneath is what runs the fire. The trees, most pine trees, could take the fire, but it's what's underneath. I mean, they're not the things catching on fire. It's all the litter on the floor and the bushes, you know, whether it's pine straw, dry leaves, brush. Yeah, this is what, that's the octane for making fires real big, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you get your fuels down underneath the timber and then so the fire stays on the ground, it won't burn up your timber. And that's the whole one of the whole ideas. Plus, it's one of the best things you can do for our wildlife habitat.
Oh, yeah, that
all
part
wildlife
is,
and yeah. this in Alabama benefits from prescribed burn, especially your birds, but all of it does. Deer, birds, a lot of your even your threatened endangered species, a lot of those do, which are indicator species on how well you're doing out there and as how many of those you have. But, yeah. But we've burned, just in the last week, we burned almost 400 acres. Actually, I guess over 400 acres in four different counties last week. It is hot right now. Mm-hmm. People, how you do it, you know, I get that every day. I'm out there. It's 95 degrees, humidity 60%. It's brutal. Mm-hmm. But everybody that's been out there with me will tell you that I usually have a big smile on my face because I know we're doing the right thing. I wouldn't dare mow the grass at 1 o'clock in the day right now because that's not a bit of fun. But I don't mind going out and burning in the middle of the day. As long as you can keep those fire, the flames down, the fire intensity down, you can do it this time of the year. You only need about 1 or 2 foot flame lengths, and it will take out all that sweet gum, gallberry, yopon, all the things that we're constantly battling with dormant season burning because it sprouts right back. This time of the year, it actually totally kills it, more than just top kills it. So it's the right thing to do, and I don't mind doing it this time of the year. And but why I'm got it on my mind thinking about it, next week I'll know the exact day coming up, but we got to learn to burn in the Bruton area next week. We just had one in Washington County a couple weeks ago. We had 40 people show up to that. We had a lot of sponsors there. It was a very good outcome. We treated about 46 acres that day, and just had a tremendous turnout and a lot of good response from our members and potential members. And so we got another one coming up in Bruton next week. A couple days out, I'll determine what day that's going to be. It's all based on weather. You know, if I call today right now, it'd rain 2 inches that day. So let's get a little closer. But our Facebook page, we've been getting...
which is?
Southern Pine Hills, PBA. If you just look that up, you know, we've been getting a lot of traffic on that lately. I've been posting a lot of good posts there. And I posted one the other day. Got over 70,000 views on that one.
Well, it makes me jealous, Gary, when I look at it, and I'm not burning, y'all are burning. I'm looking at it going, man.
Man, we'd love to have you, everybody out there.
I want to stop for a second, though. Somebody heard us, you just say the learn to burn, okay? Who's that for? Who can come to that? What do they have to do? Somebody who's never done this before but says they're interested. You know, Gary on Sean's show just said to learn to burn. Who are you talking to? What do they have to do to be part of this?
So learn to burn, any and everybody's invited to a learn to burn. You don't have to be a member of the PBA, but we'll talk about the PBA when you're there. And if you live in one of those 10 counties, southwest, now we have 4 PBAs throughout Alabama. So come to the PBA. We'll talk about what county you live in. I'll make sure you get turned on to the right PBA coordinator that you need. But, yeah, anybody's welcome to come. So I could have done my Learn to Burns at any time I wanted to, but because there's such a lack of knowledge of burning in the growing season, I decided to do both of mine in the growing season this year because been doing this for a year and talking to a lot of the landowners, a lot of them just don't even know you can burn in the middle of the summertime.
Because Gary's looking at me. Or we're scared. Like, I'm a guy who burns a good bit. Yes. But, you know, there's just – I know dormant season burns. I don't know what could happen with a growing season burn. I know I want to do it. I know it's a value. But I ain't done it yet. So, and we come back for the break. I want to talk more about that, that process, why it may be even better to burn this time of year than in the wintertime. And then also we're getting discussion what's going on out west with those wildfires as well. Gary Jarvis, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Welcome back. In this segment of the show, brought to you by my buddy Jeff Stone at Stone Arms. At Stone Arms on Airport, just a little bit past Snow, purchasing the silencer, the suppressor, the can you've been wanting for a long time is now easier and less expensive. Remember, the tax stamp fee has been eliminated. That came out of the big, beautiful bill. Still have the requirement to get the green light for your suppressor, but that $200 that I paid those years ago, you don't have to now. And the Stone Arms staff can walk you through the process, getting you in and out about half an hour, 30 minutes. And it took me, I don't want to show off, it took me 20. It's pretty easy. They have a kiosk, which is like a computer on the wall, that you put your information in and make sure you put the right information in and the right pages. Then it does the fingerprint and the photo and everything to sell, send off to the feds. And they're getting response back, green lights, 2 weeks or sooner, in some cases, 48 hours for folks. And when you're there, choose from a large selection of silencers, firearms, accessories, all in stock, plus new items arrive daily. They've got it at Stone Arms on Airport, just about a quarter mile past Snow. You want to see the inventory. The most fun is to do it in person, but you can also look at their website, stonearmsinc.com, and check them out on Facebook, Stone Arms Inc. All right, continue our conversation with my buddy, Gary Jarvis, and we're talking about prescribed burns, and you're talking about summertime burns too. Now, this is the story, you know, out west people think about the fires of the summer, and we'll get to that. But here at home, this is, if we're trying to mimic anything natural with when our fire season is, it would be something that would start in late spring, right, and move into this time
correct.
Of year.
June, that's historically.
And why is it? Why would they more naturally occur in June in our system?
Lightning. That's the biggest lightning month of the year is June, summertime. There was nobody here to put fires out during that time. And right. Native Americans set fires for the purpose of the same reason we do. Mm-hmm. And then lightning. And so it just spread on the landscape. So in this country, most Alabama, if you couldn't stand fire, you couldn't be there. So that's why we have, it was naturally longleaf.
Mm-hmm.
And all the animals and plants were adapted to that, evolved over time to be fire dependent. And so it only has been, a couple hundred years or less since we came in and cut all the timber and didn't plant it back.
Yep.
So if you want to get rid of those sweet gums permanently, growing season is by far the best time to do that. It just like I said earlier, just has a total kill instead of a top kill, like your dormant season does. And it's hot out there. I can't sugarcoat how hot it is out there. But if you think you need to drink 3 bottles of water, you probably ought to drink 10. and I'm not kidding. You just got a pound of water in Gatorade and rotate that out. And if you do that, you'll be all right. You're gonna sweat, but we try to cut our steps down as much as possible. We have side-by-sides and ATVs out there and keep the blocks small. That's a big part of it, too, is smaller the blocks. You're not hurting your people as bad. And again, it's when we show up, it's about teaching people how to do it correctly and getting some acres while we do it. So
and people will worry, there's the how hot the people are, but looking at it, and we can get to it from different perspectives, but from just a timber perspective, Gary, somebody's going to say, I'm going to scorch roots doing that. I'm going to hurt my trees doing that.
Well, I can't stress enough about, yes, you can, as you just got to know what you're doing. That's what we're here for. You cannot put the same flame links out there that you do in a dormant season, or you're going to kill your overstore. You don't need that. I like for it to just carry.
Does it carry? Because people will look at the woods and they're...
One-foot flame link's doing what a 6 or 8 foot's doing in the wintertime. It's killing that sweet gum at the base, busting that cambium layer, and taking it out. That's all you need. And
you can get it to carry? Because people will ride around now and say, man, my woods are green, Gary. What's burning?
So if you got, especially down in this part of the Alabama, if you got the... some grasses, and then you have the yaupon, gallberry, the waxy leaf vegetation. It carries a lot better than up in the northern part of the PBA, like Monroe County, Kanaka County, northern parts of those county, Wilcox County. Up there, you're out of that yaupon, gallberry range. You're dealing strictly with a leaf litter model up there. So you need pine straw. You got to have pine straw to help carry it. If you have your pines thinned down, for the folks on here to understand the forest, like a 40 basal area, which is pretty thin,
mm-hmm.
Then you may not have enough straw to carry the fire up in those regions. So When you join the PBA or you consider joining the PBA, first thing I do is tell you, give me a call. And I go out and do a site visit. We walk in, look at it, and then we talk about all of that. And I'll tell you if your fuels are even conditioned and ready for a growing season. If I go out there and there's 10-foot wall of fuel, then I'm going to probably suggest we do a dormant season to get that fuel load down. And then as soon as we get enough fuel on the ground to carry it again, which is a couple years after that, we'll do an opportunity to do a growing season burn. And but first, we got to get the fuels down to be able to do that.
Yeah, so there might be, you know, in a certain situation, even on my place, there were some places where, like, yeah, that's going to be, you know, that's growing season burns, which I do. But you mm-hmm. picked out a certain area. You said, we can, you've got this fuel load down yep. here enough, Sean, we could do summer
yep,
burn.
Based on fuel loading, and that's why we did that. And that's what I do on all the sites. And I'll have, if it's a member that's not a certified burn manager through the state, I'll help them do their burn plans. I'll help them do line location, whatever they need. I mean, we have members that never been on a prescribed burn. Some's been doing it for 40 years. And so I find somewhere to help them off somehow or another and show up with other people to help. That's the biggest thing is the members show up to help other members that need just a little bit of help.
Yeah, and that's, you know, with one of these, like what's coming up in Bruton with the Learn to Burn, you can show up having never burned
correct
before. You don't have to have burned. You could just show up and learn while you're there.
That's right. We'll walk through a burn plan. I'll show you what a really good briefing looks like, a correct briefing, go through the whole process of a briefing so when everybody leaves to go to the burn, they know what to expect. We'll talk about objectives of the burn, how to meet those objectives, how to measure those objectives after we're done, and then just go through the process, give them time on the torch, talk about firing techniques, firing patterns, how to keep the intensity down instead of strip head. We'll probably do a lot of spotting because that's how you keep intensity down this time of the year. And so, yeah, we'll go through the whole process from start to finish on the Learn to Burn. And then hopefully if you like what you see, you'll join the PBA after that. I think we picked up like 8 members at the last one.
Yeah.
And, again, it's about getting a good base of members that'll show up and help each other burn.
What do you, looking at this, somebody who's been in this world most of your life, back here at home, do you think things are turning around for burning? I mean, it used to be an odd thing that I did it, and now I hear more people seem interested in it.
I think so. Are we doing enough? Absolutely not. Yeah. But yes, I think
we better than 10 years ago.
A lot of efforts through just like this PBA. We got four mm-hmm. of them now in Alabama. And I mean, here we are. Just call us and we'll help you. I mean, that's not been around very long. Just give me a call. It costs $100 to join for 3 years for my PBA. You know, some of the other ones may be different, but the one that I'm the coordinator for, $100 for 3 years, and we show up and help you burn your property. And from a teaching standpoint, and get, you know, quite a few acres burned. Also, like I said, I think we're approaching about 2,000 acres total for in a year. And so these PBAs are coming along. These are all through grants. And but I think it's probably as good as it's ever been right now as far as the opportunity. Smoke management's always an issue, but
because that's important too. But most folks focus on the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But and not that that's very consequential. But smoke for a lot of us is the biggest deal. You and I had a conversation during the news break about a burn, and it's all about wind direction and smoke.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to smoke screen all of our burns, make sure we're not going to impact some critical smoke sensitive areas during the burn.
And also, we're going to get the break here in a second, but somebody gets started in this and then wants to move on to get that certification.
Yes.
That thing, I feel in conversations we've had, it's getting easier.
Yes.
Not the lesson, but how to do it.
Alabama Forest Commission is changing that up now. It's just going to be easier than it's ever been this fall to get certified.
This is good because there's a lot of us that have been burning for a long time that said, oh, I want to do it, but it's, you know, I don't have the time. I don't have the.
It's going to self-study, and then you'll go in for a half a day and take a test. And if you pass the test, then you'll be certified.
It's going to be a big win.
It'll be a lot more folks getting certified because of that.
Yeah, but count me in. Put me on the list. Yep. Coming right back. More with Gary Jarvis right here on Midday Mobile.
Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good to have my friend Gary Jarvis in talking about prescribed burns back here at home. One last question here. We'll come back to some, but this from Ben said, are they looking for property to teach on? Are you looking for pieces to hold learning burns on, burning learns?
Yeah, possible. Always willing to come out and look and visit it and see Cornwall County it is and location. But, yeah, my number is 251-288-1084.
I thought I was special having your phone number. You just give it to everybody.
Leery, but I did it. If you can get up with me, and we'll talk about it. Always looking for opportunities of all kinds.
Okay, yeah, and also they can go to the Facebook page, too, and reach you through the Southern Pine Hills.
Yeah, just message me through there. That's the best way to do it, and I'll get back with you for sure.
Okay, let's talk about what's going on out west. You and I, during the news break, I was showing you pictures. Friends of mine that live in Beaver, Utah, this area I was just in October. Oddly enough, I remember when I called them, the fire started. I said, did y'all have a – he said, we had a crazy drought. In October, there was snow up above our gators when we're, getting snow in our pants when we're up there mule deer hunting. And he said, that was it. They were that dry.
Yeah.
He said, we didn't get any more snow. I said, November, December? He said, not really. And
yeah, we knew Utah was going to be the hot spot this year because of that. I'm very familiar with all –
You're looking at it the whole West,
country,
too.
Yeah. The whole country. I still keep up with that. Like I said last time, I'm a fire behavior analyst. They still call me to do different things for them. But I still teach a lot around the country. So I still keep up with it. And so I lived in Utah at one time, and it was in my region. And so I was over the prescribed burn program for U.S. Forest Service at the regional level. And so I still got a lot of friends in that area, that exact area you just talked about. But we knew that Utah was going to be a hot spot because everybody was saying the snow pack was real low this year. But that's the case in a lot of areas in the West. It's just now getting started.
Yeah, we've had these, but fire season, air quotes here, is really July.
Yeah,
right?
It's really just now getting into fire season. And if you look at which I do daily, look at the map of where all the fires are, it starts in the Southeast and just – and then monsoons are starting to set up now down there, and it just gradually moves on all the way up to Canada throughout the fire season. But we're already having fires all the way up to the Canadian border now in Montana. So that's early. We're in a planning level 4 now. There's 5 planning levels, 1 being nothing's happening, 5 being it don't get any higher. And we're in a 4 now. They went into a 4 this week.
And the season's just starting.
Yeah. It's just now, I consider this early July, And so by time, if you're going out west to vacation, you better get there quick because by the end of the month, you won't be able to see for the smoke.
You think it's that bad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be.
But you've been watching this decades.
It's going to be a big year. They've been saying it, and it's coming true. Just another couple of weeks, and then if they get a lightning bust out there, it'll be PL5 real quick, and then they'll start competing for resources at that time, and then it'll be a long August for sure.
I want you to explain that, competing for resources. You talked about it last time with us, but you mentioned you forecast fires.
Yeah, I'm a fire behavior analyst, so part of
what does that mean for somebody says, what does that mean?
So
Gary?
It's modeling wildfires for different reasons. We do it at a big scale, small scale. Small scale would be for an actual fire itself. Big scale would be for a region, the whole country's broken up into regions like the Great Basin and California has a couple of regions. Northwest is Oregon and Washington State. But anyway, life, property, and resources. That's how we do it. Life's number one always is, always should be. Property's next, resources next. Properties would be communities, and resources would be timber or something like that. So always going for life, always, would be the number one. And then, if you want a fire that's threatening a community, and you want a fire out in the middle of the desert that's not, guess which one's going to get priority?
Sure.
The one threatening the community.
Where there's people.
Yes. And then so when you get down to where there's only so many hotshot crew left, so many airplanes and helicopters left, or just fire resources in general, then you start getting prioritized. You have to prioritize where, if you have one helicopter, where are you going to send it? You know, you got one air tanker, where are you going to send it? You got one hotshot crew, where are you going to send it? And so so when we had a PL-5, we start competing heavily for resources. If it gets too bad and federal and state starts running out of resources, they'll bring in the military. They already got some MAF units, which is aircraft.
Okay.
Military aircraft. They already got a couple of those National Guard units stood up. And so that's not uncommon for them to bring them on a little early. But PL-5, it gets really bad, they'll start activating Marine and Army. I've been to Pendleton myself to teach Marines before, and we'll take them and use them. But we're not there yet. But you wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, this is going to be a big year. It's definitely going to be a big year.
Yeah, and I want to come back into these fires, but something you talked about last time to give people here perspective. We've all seen these fires on TV. I've spent enough time out west. I've seen the smoke and seen the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen the things you saw fighting fires. You talked about a flame length on one fire one time that I want folks to hear again to picture this. How tall?
Oh, we've already had a lot of fires this year that have had, you know, 200 or 300 foot flame lengths.
200 or 300 foot flame lengths. Y'all think about that for a second.
That gets you every time, don't it, Sean?
It does, because I've spent enough time. If I see a 25 foot flame length on something here, I'm like, I cannot imagine 300 foot flame length.
And then, you know, when you get flame lengths like that and you start having multiple fires in the same area, they start pulling together. And, you know, unfortunately, we had fatalities here recently.
Yeah, a woman from Alabama.
Yeah, and, you know, Sidney Watson from Alabama, Warrior, Alabama, was one of the three. And the way I understand it, there was 3 or 4 fires in that area that all burned together.
Because, like, Western Colorado, right, on that fire?
Yeah, it's right on the Utah border. Colorado border, their Grand Junction area. They were working on the Helitac crew, and I'm familiar with that.
What is a Helitac crew?
I had a good friend in 1994, if you remember Storm King, July the 6th in 1994. A fire burned over a group of firefighters there, 14, if I remember correctly, killed on that fire. And friend of mine was out there on a Helitac crew. So Helitac uses helicopters to get to the fire. Now, sometimes they may land the helicopter and get out, or they may fast rope out of the helicopter, rappel, not fast rope. I don't think many people do that anymore, but rappel out of the helicopter
with all their gear. With all their gear.
Yeah. And so you have smoke jumpers. They jump out of airplanes and parachute in. Then you have rappel crews, which use helicopters, hover over, and they'll just rappel down to the ground. And then you have shot crews that, you know, sometimes they walk in or sometimes a helicopter fly in and land and let them in. But it's just when you say like Helitac or
that just tells you they're delivered by helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But they're a firefighting crew, just like a hot shot crew is, a hand crew, you know, and just use a different way to get there. And so I don't know specifics that happened on this particular fire, and it'll be a while. They'll go in and they'll review that, and they'll come out with a report later on. But you know, my career doing this 40 years, being a fire behavior analyst and working at some upper positions in the U.S. Forest Service, I have served on several of those teams in the past. And usually we're trying to recreate the fire because I'm a fire behavior analyst and what the fire did itself. But you know, you just never know, you know. You never speculate, I don't anyway, about what happens on those until the report comes out. And sometimes you'll never know because you wasn't there when it happened. You didn't see what they saw.
Right. Who knows at this point. Yeah. But I want to pick your brain for being somebody who was in those theaters. You go in, let's see, hot shot crew. They're putting you, obviously, where the fire's coming. Mm-hmm. Do you know how you're getting, before you go in, do you know how you're getting out? I mean, do you know, like, you go in and say, okay, we're going to try to fire line this, is, you know, try to keep it walking, from walking over to this next ridge or whatever it is. Do you know where you get out? Do you know?
Yeah, so part of our training from day one is escape route and safety zones. Route and safety zones. You got to have a safety zone, but you got to have an escape route to get to your safety zone. So when you're out there, you're always thinking, where am I going to go if something happens? Where's my escape route? Where's my safety zone? Is it adequate? And if it's not, you need
How far out from a safety zone would you get? I mean, because...
Well, if you can get to the black, that's the safest place.
Right, but here's the thing. Here at home, I always tell folks, partner with me, get to the black, nothing will happen. But we don't have 300-foot flame height.
You should be always thinking about. That's why good communication. What if you're out across a burn unit and you step in a hole and twist your ankle and fall down and you can't move?
Right.
Do you have a radio on you or cell phone on you? We do with the PBA. We have radios and make sure we share that. But anyway, that's part of the whole safety thing is, what am I going to do if something happens? How am I going to get out of here? And if you can't answer that question, then you need to be able to answer that question, whatever that looks like. You need to make sure you can do that.
So if somebody's helicoptering in or parachuting in versus coming in on vehicles or foot, they still have that established. They say, hey, y'all, here's your safe zone. Here's how you get there.
Yes, and unfortunately, sometimes we get cut off from our safety zones, and our escape routes are compromised due to maybe a sudden shift in wind or whatever that might be. Surprise! Don't think the fire's going to do what it did. Mm-hmm. You know, it ends up doing something different than what was expected. A wind shift's a big one, or getting wind speeds that wasn't forecasted is always a big one. So that's why we constantly watch the wind, pay attention, because wind and wind speed and direction is get you quicker than anything. When it comes to the fire getting you, there's obviously other dangers out there like falling snags and things like that we have to pay attention to. But as far as the fire doing unexpectedly, it's usually wind speed and changing direction, could be a thunderstorm in the area. I was just on a burn last week, and I heard a little rumble to the south, and everybody's like, oh, there comes a thunderstorm. Mm-hmm. To me, it's wind. To me, that means wind. Wind's going to change. May not be a 40-mile-an-hour, but it means that the wind's going to pick up, and it could change the direction. And where are we at right now? Do we have good, safe black line in, or can we handle that when it happens? Yeah. If we can't, then we need to get to where we can. We may pick up the pace, do whatever.
Even though the forecast said the wind is X, whatever it is. You have the forecast wind. But, yeah, anybody who's been out on a boat or your yard or anywhere, a thunderstorm's coming, all of a sudden you feel cool wind from a new direction, watch the leaves turn upside down, and go, this is changing.
And if you're going to get rain, you're going to get wind before that rain comes. And can you handle that wind before the rain gets there? Or if you ever even get rain, you may not get it. So back to the west, we have those, I talked about, 20, 30,000-foot columns out there when you get that 2-3 foot flame length, 100-foot flame length running a half a mile wide head. It kicks up those high columns, and then we get downbursts out of those.
You said this last time. It makes thunderstorms.
It makes thunderstorms. It makes lightning, and even rains at times.
In a situation where there wasn't that in the forecast, but the column of smoke goes up, process it creates
just
a thunderstorm.
Just the sheer amount of heat that goes up does that.
It creates
out of those. Yep. Just that. Just the amount of heat that goes up creates those, and goes up, and we call it the column collapses. When it does, all that wind comes down and pushes out, and it can affect you from miles and miles away.
Coming right back, conversation with Gary Jarvis. We'll talk more about the Learn and Burn event coming up and ask some of the questions from the text line next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up 153, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Gary Jarvis, owner of Wildland Fire Support Incorporated. And the man behind you can go check out the Facebook page, too, for getting signed up, Southern Pine Hills Prescribed Burn Association. And talking about what's happening, once again, this event coming up in Bruton is when? Next?
Yeah, what?
It's the
25th.
Yeah.
Is what we got set aside. And so when we see that we got the weather, we'll call the day and notify the folks that have signed up within 48 hours. So you got to sign up so we know logistically that we got adequate parking, and we furnish a meal to one of our sponsors, the Longleaf Alliance.
Well, you didn't tell me that. Well, there'd be food there.
Longleaf Alliance will be sponsoring our meals. And show up there and but make sure you register first. So we need to make sure everybody's got a meal and we got adequate parking. And this day, the biggest thing is we got plenty of water and Gatorade because we go through a lot.
Guaranteed. Yeah, stay hydrated. You think you need to hydrate in summertime? You need to hydrate in summertime on a burn for sure.
Yeah.
It's a question I asked you during the news break and thinking about, you know, and we have the fatalities and people that died. We don't know the situation specifically that killed these firefighters, but you've been on a fire where whether you've gone in with Helitac or you've gone in another way, and then you get the call to come out.
Yeah, so what does that feel like? To the escape route safety zone. So yes, I'm also have been a division supervisor, which means that all these fires are broken up into divisions, and you're assigned a division if you're a division supervisor. So in my career of doing this, I have pulled back many a times. I mean, when you know you shouldn't be there, you shouldn't be there, or if you don't have adequate safety zone escape routes, then you bring all your people out into a safe spot and regroup. And sometimes that means sitting there while the fire is running 6-7 miles because there is nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, that's that feeling I was wondering about.
And you're making a plan the whole time you're doing that about, well, it's going to lay down tonight and tomorrow we'll do something different or, you know, but, you know, firefighter safety, public firefighter safety is always our number one priority. And bringing everybody back home, letting everybody go home after the shift is number one. And so, I've through the years, say I've spent 4 years on a shot crew and just been in all kinds of different situations in my life. And I don't know how many times I have disengaged because
you weren't going to beat it there.
Yeah, something bad was about to happen or did happen or shouldn't be there. So we get in a safe zone and come up with another plan.
Yeah, we talk about prescribed burns back here at home, what we're doing. You talk about teaching out west, going out there. Do you see anything changing for that? I mean, I know it's not the same forest. I know, but this idea of let's try to take some fuel off before we have these summers like we're having right now.
Yeah, burn as much as you can. Prescribe burn. Do it under your
situation. But do they do it out there? Are they?
You know, nobody does it enough. But like I said earlier, the Southeast does it more than anybody. So yes, they can need to continue to increase their patient scale of prescribed burn in the West if they're ever going to make a difference. They definitely
do. You talk
need
to people
to
out there
that
hear what you're saying and said, yes, we need to do. States say we're going to.
Yeah,
do
they all do. My last job with U.S. Forest Service, I was over the whole prescribed burn program for the U.S. Forest Service. You know, I spent my last 3 years at the national level, and so I had the whole country, and so I traveled around the country, and looked, you know, and was, you know, basically, why aren't you burning more? Why aren't you treating fuels more? You know, and so we have always been pushing the pace. I will say that there's, you know, it's accepted in the Southeast a lot better than it is anywhere else, and. You know, a little bit of smoke out there gets people really anxious and excited. But we got good people out there. They're working on it. Like I said, last time I was here, I just come back off of 2 prescribed burns at the base of Mount Shasta
in California.
In Redding, California. We did 2 burns while we were out there. And that program out there, I know all that leadership up there, they always looking for more. They got a lot planned, and they doing their best
in
Northern California. Get more prescribed burn on the ground.
It's good news. Let's keep doing it here. It's my friend Gary Jarvis. Thank you. Thanks for the work you're doing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next, y'all.